Thank you.
Of the board members, the energy chief, not the SHRS worker. But you'll introduce your team to us at the appropriate time. All the members, we only have three items for the agenda today. The one is to do the attendance register with the apologies, and then to have the presentation from SA Tourism, and then we'll consider the minutes of our last meeting. Can I, on item one, request that maybe the members introduce themselves? We'll start with the member furthest to my left.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Wasim Magwebu from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber from the Northern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Jacques Long.
I've seen with only Brenda Matewul. I'm from Limpopo province.
Good morning, I'm Mr. Rasmus from Parliament.
Good morning, everybody. It's Ismail Hussain from PMG.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Patrick PLO in the Minister.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Amr from Mangani from the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, my name is Ismail Dukala, also from the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kirsa Kamika. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General of Tourism.
Good morning. My name is Patrick Minister. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at Tara Open Tourism.
Good morning, Mr. Members. My name is Steve Sarnichana. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Tara Open
Tourism. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Tom Bauer. I'm the CFO of Tara
Open Tourism.
Morning, my name is Lydia Matiche from the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, my name is Anele Mshegeza from SA Tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Lorene Samula. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry of Tourism.
Good morning, I'm Tishni Gavinder from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Again, warm words of welcome to all of you. We have apologies from the Minister Derek Hanekom, the Deputy Minister Elizabeth Tabete. Both of them are in meetings of the Cabinet. Then we also have an apology from Anami Malan, who is the DG on Tourism, the Research, Policy and International Relations. Members, what's happening is that the presentation is from SA Tourism, but then the National Department of Tourism elects certain people, and therefore that's a policy for the DGT. We also have an apology from the Honorable Dikhale. Those are the only apologies that I have. Can we then immediately give over to Mr. Sisa? I'm always tempted to say Sisa because I'm Joanna. to lead the presentation. We have the document that has been circulated to us well before the meeting. We will receive the entire presentation and only after that engage with the presenters. So you are at liberty to delegate to whoever, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning again, Honourable Members. It gives us great pleasure to come to the Select Committee and take you through our APPs. I also just want to extend an apologies from our South African Tourism Board itself. We've got a brand new board, and they just asked for some time for them to meet as a board first so that they can select subcommittees and everyone else from their perspective. So I think going forward you'll see actually some of the board members. But I think we've got more than enough delegation around the table, both from the ministry and also tourism itself, to make sure that we've covered all the areas that are there. Now, as you rightfully said, Chair, we've given forward a presentation, and please allow this to be more about information and about context. We've tried to give from different angles so that it can actually give you a bit of a 360 picture of what's going on. However, when I take you through the presentation, I will be going through some slides quite quickly and then probably rest on others for points of emphasis. How we've actually structured, although today is about APP conversation, we will touch on 2017 performance to give you a sense in terms of how we built up these APPs that ultimately lend us into the space that we are. So with those views, just basically saying that I'll take you through about 2017 and then move over basically into the APPs themselves, and then afterwards take the questions from the honourable members. As always is the rule, the CEO takes the easy questions and the difficult questions go to the capable members around basically over here. They've got to pay for their flights and everything. So, to start on the first slide, again, I've just kind of said, is I'll just talk about the context of the operating environment. I'll talk about the environment as well and in terms of some of the issues that are there. And then I'll take you through the 2017 performance and then the APPs themselves, basically, from that side. And then obviously end up on the finance side in terms of how we're going to make the magic as it will happen in 2018-2019. Right. The first slide is, as you all know, about how tourism has really been elevated now in terms of being not only a priority sector within the NDP, but, you know, when the President in his very first SONA address talks about how we need to double the number of jobs, basically, in tourism. Our view is simple, is that no one creates jobs. Jobs will become the consequence of growth. So, therefore, focus on the growth. The jobs basically will come in from that side. I think the President spoke about three specific areas as to how to enable these jobs to be created. One is about destination marketing, to make sure that we become a lot more deliberate in the markets overseas that we target. Right? We can't be everything to everyone, but if we are very clear about where our supply side is going to be, our demand side we are focusing on, it will make it much clearer on that side. The second one is a very topical issue within the tourism space about removal of barriers, right? And we're looking at everything from visa facilitation to unemployment certificates and any other barriers that are there, including airline lift and connectivity and everything else there. Because the easier we are to sell, the more likely we're able to attract the numbers that we are basically doing over there. Then the last one, the big focus for SA Tourism is to make sure that this growth includes new players as well. So emerging tourism businesses must be part and parcel of the overall value proposition that we dish out to the world. Right? It can't only be in the big kind of well-known areas as well, but how do we light up other provinces so that they can also start to have a play? I'm sure that's close to the heart of many members on the table, because my sense, whenever we speak here, everyone is rooting for their province, and they're always asking, well, what are you doing for this province? Back down to a city level at times as well, you know. So happy to have those conversations and you can go through on that side. The next slide is more of an internal slide, and it's just, I'll move this on quickly, but it's about how we at SA Tourism look and organize ourselves in order to achieve these targets that we've set for ourselves. Key, the headline that we would like you to note, and that's what we've taken you previously, we've set ourselves to get 5 million more tourists in 5 years' time. We call it 5 in 5, right? And how that 5 in 5 is split is 4 million international tourists and 1 million holiday domestic trips. It is a 40% uplift over a 5-year period. A very ambitious target, but something we truly feel can be done. So all of our investments, all of our focus is really driving towards those goals and make sure that we can eke the best out of them from that perspective. And you'll see when I take you through then in terms of how we start to align and make sure we deliver on that job. The next slide is really more of a graphical depiction of what I've just spoken about. So if you look on your left-hand side, it's our source market. That's where we get visitors traveling to South Africa. That's where we mine. That's where we compete with other destinations in order for people to come to South Africa. Coincidentally, it's also where we have geographic footprint in terms of physical office and physical warm bodies around the world in terms of from that perspective. Key to note there is right at the bottom of the left is what we call other. We also look at the formalized agreements with DERCO, where we use our embassies as a point of presence as well, where we use them to also drive tourism from that perspective. Whilst we may not have SA tourism people, but we certainly do cover them from a head office perspective. So it's to make sure that they have the necessary documents, the necessary library, and any specific activities that we're able to target to bring people across there. Because we truly believe that tourism is everyone's business. So if there's anything here, we've done a lot of work around DERCO. As a result, as an example, honorable members, when, I'm going to get the wording wrong, but when they're about to allocate new ambassadors and then everyone across the board, we become part of the induction of those people before they leave the country. We tell them about tourism, we tell them about our modus operandi, and where our focus areas is at. Important to note, in a major departure in a focus area for tourism, it's not good enough for us to know where we are going to be getting these people from, but where are they going to? And that's the distribution markets on the right-hand side. And that's where the provincial tourism authorities, where each province has one and reports into the provincial legislator, becomes important. Because it would be senseless if we want an extra 4 million people to come through, but we don't have enough beds in Limpopo or in Northwest or in Western Cape, et cetera, et cetera. So to make sure that this incremental number that we're expecting is distributed across the provinces, and then there's alignment in the provinces. What you've seen previously is that if you go to the APPs of the provincial tourism authorities and you add them up, they don't add up to the national picture. Right, and that's where the disjointedness comes to. So this is about aligning and make sure that we are all in the same space, basically, from that environment. Now I'm going to jump in into the 2017 financial year performance to set the backdrop for our 18-19 APPs. As I said, some I'll be going quite quickly, but some are, it's the same view, it's the same story, but from a different view, which just enriches the conversation then. On the first one, I'll start with you know, the 5 in 5 side, which is basically holiday trips, domestic holiday trips. Important to note here that at times we get confused about holiday trips and domestic trips and everything else. Domestic trips, total domestic trips, is made up of a couple of key components. The first one is what we call VFR, visiting friends and relatives. And that's typically between 60 to 65% of total domestic trips. Within there, there is also what you call business trips as well. This is where you survey people and say, what's the primary reason for traveling to Cape Town as today? We are here in business. That's what we tick. Then there's a portion there, which is the holiday trips. The primary reason for traveling is holiday trips, which includes paid for overnight accommodation. That's the key element within that slice that is included in our 5 in 5 target, that extra million. At the moment, it sits, used to sit on, in 2016 on 2.7 million international trips. We want to move that to 3.7 million in 5 years' time. In that regard. So that's what we'll be reporting on the domestic holiday trips here. And what we saw is a 12% increase within the 2017 calendar year of holiday trips. Two things kind of happened. It's important to understand the context of South Africa and our Gini coefficient or inequality. And what you saw is that those that have the means of traveling are actually traveling more, right? And they're also traveling less overseas as well. So you start to see a lot more of domestic travel, holiday trips, but it's repeated a couple of times. However, the gaps of have-not is growing much quicker and faster than the haves. So you see the VFR has come down quite substantially. And that's what we're trying to depict, basically, there. And VFR is going to a funeral, going to a wedding, and those type of social kind of interactions from that perspective. The traffic there has really quite significantly come down. So whenever we see at times domestic tourism down, we've got to be aware what actually we mean by domestic tourism and which part of it from that perspective. We've come quite loudly, and hopefully you've seen some of the new refreshed short-lived images that are coming through. We're specifically targeting an up-and-coming middle class, as an example, that is black, that is young, and we want them to identify themselves in all of the imagery that we put out there from a tourism perspective. That this country is, in fact, our tagline, it's your country, travel it or something, enjoy it, sorry. So, you see the marketers and the non-marketers. It's your country, enjoy it. In almost in a way, giving them permission to interact with South Africa and make sure, basically, that they're able to enjoy all the benefits that are there. On the right-hand side is on the international tourist arrivals. This space grew 2.4% year on year. Right. And by the way, this is the first year of our 5 in 5 journey. It's important to know that one. If you compare this to global international arrivals, globally the world grew at 7%. So if you look at our growth versus the world, we, at a very high level, you start to see that actually we grew, yes, but we grew much slower than the world. So that basically means someone out there is eating our lunch because we're not catching up to international growth. Interesting to note here, though, is to understand how, when you talk international, how this pie is split up. There are three countries that we should be aware of that contribute 50% to our international arrivals. That is Zimbabwe, that is Lesotho, and Mozambique. Those three are 50% of our international arrivals. And what basically happens is that when those three slow down, the cascading effect becomes wider across the whole kind of portfolio there. There were currency issues in Zimbabwe, an example, that didn't make people to happen. In 2017, in Mozambique, we also had floods and other issues coming through on that side. Now, if we then just plug these ones out and let's look at the performance around the world, we start to see a bit of a different picture. We start to see that in the U.S., we are 7.5% up. We start to see that in Europe, we're also up as well. And I'll cover that in those next coming slides there. So if you go to the next slide, again, this is just a physical depiction so that you can see the trending of how we're going in terms of year-on-year increase on the international arrival side. Key to note, in 2015, you see that blip over there. This is the Ebola blip, we call it. This is when the world decided that all of Africa has Ebola and they stopped visiting us from that perspective. There are always these external threats that we always have to fight and kind of be to counter. One of them, as an example, becomes the water crisis, right? Again, nothing, not directly linked to tourism, but having a huge impact on tourism. Listeriosis becomes another one. When the images start to go around that actually our food is contaminated, people stop traveling, as an example. We're also seeing, especially in the Australia market, you know, things around land expropriation without compensation are becoming very topical things that also start to have an impact on tourism on that side. Next slide. Now, this is the picture that I wanted to give you around our performance for 2017. I spoke on Africa, the continent itself, where 75% of our arrivals really comes from the continent. If we exclude the continent, we look around the world. I spoke about North America, 7.8% up, which is above the 7% average around the world. Europe, 7.6% up. Key to note there that Germany gave us double-digit growth of 12%, something very encouraging over there. The UK was flat on that perspective, and they go through their own kind of issues around Brexit and everything else there. Central and South America, 59% up. It's something to see there, basically, double-digit growth. However, they're from a smaller base, but essentially pointing the right way. The key areas of concern are Asia, right? And there's two big markets there that the world is absolutely winning on, however we're deteriorating. One is China, right? We reduced 17% year-on-year in China, whilst everyone else around the world is increasing. Couple of things there. Again, you know, when you've got a population of a billion-plus people and we have a visa regime, you better make sure that your processes and the system actually are very smooth and come through kind of that side. You've got to make sure that the access to it becomes an issue. And I'm going to lump in India as well into this. India grew 1.4%. You know, not 0.4% year on year, and we see a lot of potential for growth there. Again, you have a billion people, and you know, representation, physical presence becomes an issue. So, practically, people have to fly somewhere to actually get a visa application done. We're going to fly back, we're going to fly again to go and pick it up. So these are some of the barrier removals that we speak about as well. Airline connectivity becomes key, and also the perceptions around safety and security in South Africa are really top of mind in that regard. So we have what we call a China war room, somebody that way, where we start to look at how we can remove some of these barriers in order to give us some of the performance that is there. The next slide gives you a sense in terms of, I've spoken about now the source markets, now let me talk about the distribution side. Provinces, how do they perform basically from international perspective year and year, you know, relative to each other. So we know that we grew by 2.4%, but across the provinces, which one fared better than the others? The Gauteng took a bit of a dip, and you'll understand that the top three source markets of Gauteng are the very same three top source markets for South Africa, which are Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Mozambique. And when those take a dip, you can see the numbers in Gauteng took a dip as well. Limpopo was up, and all the other provinces marginally up as well. Free State kind of flat a little bit. Even the Northern Cape put in some action there, which is really encouraging, 15% growth. In the Eastern Cape, 27% growth there year and year. I think those members that are in the room and are looking at the provinces should be smiling. Maybe the ones that are negative are not the people in the room, so there's something to be said there. The next slide, honorable members, is really about giving context there. It's really about some of the things that I've highlighted about the what we call the big gorilla market that are there and the impact that they have on our numbers. It also talks about how if we look at our performance of 2.4% up, if you remove Africa out, you see we're at 6.7%. Include Africa in and it's 0.8% as well in terms of proximity that sits on that side. The next slide gives you a bit of a sense in terms of what are some of the barriers that I spoke about at the beginning. What's the world saying about South Africa? Why are we not seeing 20% growth, 30% growth, 50% growth? What's in our way and what do we need to do? First one is about too expensive to get there. And I'll say expensive very loosely, not just financial, but also time and resources. So one of our requirements of unabridged certificates is that we need the parents to prove that these children are theirs, number one. If only one parent is traveling, we need them to prove that they have the consent of the other parent to travel with them. So in South Africa, we have affidavits, or affidavits, as it were. And in here, you can go to the local police station and get a stamp, and your document is certified. However, in other markets, it doesn't work like this. You can't go to the police station. You actually have to go to a lawyer to certify a document. And they may charge a fee of 50, 30, 40 pounds just to certify the document. So immediately there's a cost even before I've even thought about coming to South Africa that is there, as an example. The issues, however, around child trafficking and everything else are not unique to South Africa. And what the ministry, we are saying to them, is that how do we become part of the global norm as to how we treat these cases from that perspective? Airlift becomes important. We are certainly part and parcel of what we call airlift strategies of provinces. And typically, we've got three players over there. You've got the local provincial tourism authority itself, you have airports company, and you have SA Tourism. We've done some really great and fantastic work around the Western Cape together with Wesco, as you've seen in terms of some of the uplift and the number of direct flights coming into the Western Cape. We'll continue to drive that because we want to position any part of the country as a gateway into the country itself. We also have some success in KZN. I'm sure you'd have heard that British Airways has announced a direct flight between Heathrow and King Shark International Airport. That is going to give that particular destination a nice uplift provincially as well, because coming flying directly into KZN gives you then access in terms of the rest of the province as well. You also would have seen that even in Gauteng, Alitalia has introduced a flight between Rome and Johannesburg direct as well. That gives us connectivity into that important market. So I'm giving you a sense in terms of it's not just looking at the destination, but you've got to look at the environment as well. And we become part and parcel in terms of making sure that we can support airline connectivity as well. We're also not just looking at internationally. We've got to look domestically as well. You know, I grew up in an era when there were midnight flights, and I think that's the first time I got into a plane because the flight was literally 50% of the flight. some of us rocked up wearing our gowns and nighties, because, you know, we thought it's a midnight flight, but nonetheless, you know, it was something that's there. So we are always probing in terms of how do we then start to bring more domestic flights in order to decrease the pricing and accessibility around it. However, we live in a world that we live in, and the reality is that SA Express has been suspended, and immediately that has an impact on us. Right? Suddenly now connectivity into the Northern Cape is not at the frequency that it was. So our numbers will take a dip. Suddenly DRC will take a dip because SA Express services Lubumbashi and we won't have the connectivity. So it's in our interest, not in our direct control, but in our interest to make sure that the environment as well around us becomes sorted in that regard. Then the last one, safety and security. Very, very big and very, very topical. Every single time something happens to a tourist, it makes news. It doesn't make bigger news here, however, it makes more news in the source market. When a Chinese tourist gets mugged or something happens over there, the Chinese market, our office, starts to bleep all over the show about what is happening. When an Australian tourist gets mugged, it makes big news in Australia. So we are forever spending time, resources to counter a lot of these negative perceptions as well that are floating out there. It is what it is, and we've taken the view that, you know, we can sit back and retort and say, well, there are muggings happening every day to tourists in Barcelona and Paris. It doesn't matter. It's just that South Africa is viewed from a different space, and we have to try that much harder to counter all of this. We are looking at specific campaigns in terms of how we can PR this, but through the Ministry of Tourism, as an example, safety monitors have been deployed as a pilot in Vilakazi Street, as an example. And then these are EPWP programs about visibility and presence so that these things can start to be reported a lot more quicker and efficiently as well. And we are also looking at the Tourism Business Council of South Africa as to how we start to coordinate the private sector when crime incidents start to happen. We all know that at its peak, we had those follow-home incidents around from the airport at Oar Tambo. This is where the ministry swiftly got in touch with safety and security, and something was basically done around that side. This is a very, very, very big concern for us, and we've got to start to portray South Africa in a positive manner. So those are the key things that we always need to keep in mind that are holding us back. It's not good enough for us at SA Tourism to say, well, these are out of our control, we can't do anything about it, but essentially we do rally everyone to say, well, tourism is everyone's business and we need everyone basically to be part and parcel from that side. The next couple of slides is more of a slicing and dicing of what I've really been talking about. It's different views and different angles around what I've been basically talking about. And this one covers the domestic, total domestic trips, which I've spoken about in terms of how we define that one, and also the holiday trips as well. The next slide just talks about the we measure both the volume and the value. So we measure how many people travel domestically, internationally, but you also measure in terms of what the expenditure and how much they spend from that perspective. And there you start to see contrasting views in terms of international side and also the domestic side as well. We are potentially walking into a situation where we may be, as a destination, pricing ourselves uncompetitively out. And here's what I mean. So there are two factors that actually influence our pricing. And by the way, our pricing is not done by SA Tourism, but by actual trade themselves. One is inflation. So our inflation increase of 6-7% per annum is something totally foreign to our European market, who experience 0.8% inflation, as an example. That's the first one. The second one is the currency. When the currency is weak, what trade typically does is ramp up its pricing because for the same pound, they can get more rent back. When it goes the opposite way, it does not come down. And as a result, when people look at year on year and say, what, you are 35% more expensive. You are 40% more expensive year on year. In red terms, it doesn't translate into that, but overseas, it may be seen that way as well. So really about getting trade involved that says, we've got to make sure that we have a lot more dynamic pricing, got to make sure that we have pricing basis that's appropriate to where we're at. Then the next slide just talks now a bit more on the domestic picture. If you look at the top right-hand corner over there, it gives you the slice of the cake of the domestic space. So I've talked about earlier on visiting friends and relatives, 50%. That's the majority. This is not unique to South Africa. By the way, it's a global phenomenon in terms of VFR being the predominant one. Right. Then the second space to look at is the holiday trips, 17%, and then business, and then other as well. So whenever you hear total domestic tourism down, it incorporates all of them. However, in terms of our ABP targets of our 5 in 5 as an example, it is the red part, which is the holiday trips, which is something that SA Tourism can influence and does influence in terms of driving the numbers down or up from that side. You'll see across the board there in terms of what we see. First one is Limpopo. Limpopo is the number one tourism destination provincially from that. By miles, not just by a little bit there as well. And you start to see the level of VFR influence that's kind of pulling it down, you know, from an all-time 8-point-something million to more about 4.5 million, almost half perspective. And that weighed down as an impact on the overall figures that you see starting to sit over there. What are we doing about this? The next slide gives you a bit of a sense in terms of some of the campaigns, and you look at the bottom there, it shows you some of the campaigns that we've had. The most recent one that I've spoken about now is the Short Left campaign that starts to bring about awareness and starts to drive some of this activity over there. I'll touch on it a bit later in our APPs, but one of the key items that we have is what we call geographic spread. It's one thing to make sure we get the numbers of tourists traveling within South Africa or coming from internationally, but you've got to make sure that the impact of tourism itself across the 9 different provinces and not just in some of the nodes that are there. Part of the space that we've done is that we've profiled ourselves and painted ourselves into a corner, quite frankly, that we are 3 major destinations. We are all about the beach down here in the Western Cape. We are all about the mountain in the Drakensberg, and then we are all about the bush in Safari. So people do this triangle. Come to South Africa, well, if I've been to the beach in Cape Town, been to the Drakensberg, been to Safari, I've seen the country. Literally. So therefore, trying to entice people to come the second time around, say, but I've seen everything. Say, no, you've not. There's a whole lot of other spaces that we are bringing in. So therefore, it's about making sure that those provinces that we want to get more action are fit for purpose for the traffic that we want to drive to them. And that's part of our quarterly conversations, basically, with the provinces. Some of the things that we are doing around domestic tourism, it's a focus for us. It certainly has our chief operating officer awake at night, more often than she should, as a key driver of this space, but also amongst the executive team, we have a focus around this side. So, what are the things that I'm going to look at? One is to make sure that we inculcate a culture of travel amongst South Africans themselves to get to know the country. But more importantly, we are now looking for partnerships outside of our conventional space. We are starting to target what we call aggregators, where we want them to become distribution points for tourism. As an example, what I mean by this one, so if you start to look at supermarkets, like Shoprite as an example, right, or Pick and Pay, they've got points of presence right across the country. How do we make those points of presence, number one, that people can go and buy specific tourism products or offerings from their perspective. That certainly works, that's on the go all the time. The second part is together with the ministry, they've got a department there headed by DDG that is destination development. It's one thing to say that we want more people to travel to the Northern Cape, but if there are no experiences in the Northern Cape, then it becomes a futile exercise. So with the development, destination development, it says, well, we want to drive more traffic to those specific provinces. Let's start now invest in activities and things to do in development, in B&Bs or whatever it is, in order to make sure that we can drive the traffic that comes into those spaces there as well. Then there's also through the department as well, where we say to ourselves, we want to develop more DMCs, and DMCs are, call them tour operators as an example, right? That they are actually start to package the target destinations in a way that is palatable to all of us. We need the locals of Northern Cape to package a Northern Cape experience that we then put on our platforms to make sure it's visible. But we want this to happen on the ground over there. who best to tell the stories of the Northern Cape than the people who come from the Northern Cape, as an example. So I'm spotting on the Northern Cape here because this is one of our focus areas to make sure that we drive from the perspective. And then now we also start to look at events. We start to look at partnerships. Everything from the Comrades Marathon to the Soweto Marathon, as an example, Cycle Tour over here, all of them to say, how then do we attach a tourism angle to it? Well, tourism is about movement. We want to give people the opportunity and excuse to move. So, as an example, if you go into the Berlin Marathon website and you go over there, there's actually an icon that they can actually buy and click an accommodation package and then end over there. We're not there yet, but we want to definitely get over there so that we can let ourselves to already what is happening and start to have those experiences that are coming through. SA Tourism is not the one that actually puts together the packages, that actually takes people on tours. It is the trade themselves. And we want to entice and bring trade in to say, back of this thing that is happening, you can actually start to sell your business a lot more from that regard. I'm going to go through the other side, but I want to get to the actual ATPs themselves, which is the focus area of what you're talking about here. The next area of our business that's important is around business events. Again, there, it's about making sure that we drive and market South Africa as a destination for major business events, the MICE business, meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions. There's one that we are very excited about, the Ophthalmology Society, as an example. 14,000 delegates are coming through to South Africa in 2021, right? Now, immediately we want to say, we want to make sure all 14,000 of them come, number one. Number two, we do what you call delegate boosting. So those 14,000, we want them to bring their families with, right, their spouses, their children. So suddenly now 14,000, you can multiply it by two or three as the multiplier effect. And they could start after the conference here to start to see and develop and see the country as it were. The next slide gives you a sense now in terms of making sure that we're not only focusing on the big ICCs, but there are also smaller ICCs, whether you're talking, if London as an example has got an ICC, even Kimberley's got an ICC, but they're much smaller. We want to make sure that we bring a lot more traffic into this. And again, not only just focus on international, but also focus on national conferences. So as an example, the Nurses Conference that happens every 2 years or so. Why does it always happen in Sandton in Johannesburg? How do we incentivize them to have it in Kimberley? As an example. So that's part of the active work that we do to make sure that the impact of this gets felt basically across the board. And again, similarly, we work together with the provincial tourism authorities to make sure that we can drive in that regard. Then the next area of our business, so the leisure side, is the business event side, and then grading. Grading is a major focus area for us, and in fact, tomorrow we've got quite a big session around grading to look at its relative competitiveness in the environment that we find ourselves in at the moment. We want to drive more entities to be graded. And here's a simple value about grading, is that major hotel chains have a brand, and this brand holds them in good state. So therefore, you can consume Intercontinental, Holiday Inn, or Hilton without even thinking twice, because you know the value that is there. The issue becomes now in the smaller mom and pop type of operation. Stairs B&Bs, Tom's B&B, Bush's B&B, no one knows them. When we grade them, we give them a stamp of approval, a quality assurance stamp of approval that gives the consumer confidence and also recourse when what they're buying. They will know that when it says it's a four-star, they expect a four-star treatment, et cetera, et cetera. What's important, we also get to protect the brand image or tourism image of South Africa. Because when a tourist comes through and experiences bad service, they will go back to their home country and speak about it. And there's no recourse to have around that one. So quality assurance as a concept becomes important in that regard there. And I'll speak to more on these in the APPs themselves. When you start to look now in terms of which where our distribution of grading establishments are, you can see the Western Cape leading by far in terms of the grading establishments in that regard. Key here as well, we're also in a shared economic world as an example, and that's also starting to compete with what it is that we're trying to do. So therefore, we have to look differently across this business. The next two slides really just gives you a different perspective of what I gave you around the distribution of these graded establishments and the different categories that you have. That we have everything from hostels, backpayers, to lodges, hotels, guest houses across the board from their perspective there as well. We also look at the number of rooms that are there, but we also look at the number of establishments that are there as well. Okay. I'm going to go through those slides. And then last one on setting the scene still is around our transformation framework, as I say, tourism, which split into four different areas for us, and that's how we consume it, that we will drive it. We don't have a transformation department because we fundamentally believe that transformation needs to be part and parcel of how we deliver this business and not sitting in a separate corner. Number two, we've got to make sure that transformation works for us and is not just a tick box. So it's not you know, a mutually exclusive performance or transformation. Us, we see that as one thing and enabling from that perspective. So at SX Tourism, we've got four quadrants. The first one is employment equity. Our staff, who are we? Who do we hire? How diverse are we as a team? Are we representative of the country that we are profiling to the world as well? That's the one focus area. The second part is our marketing activities. So all of our material, whom do we use? Whom do we have around us? Who become essentially the marketing work that we do? We spend, remember, our key focus areas about marketing South Africa. So therefore, how do we showcase? Whom do we use, basically, in our content? And who else gets absorbed into the space around our marketing activities? The third part becomes around supplier, enterprise supply development, supply chain, right? Again, very deliberate and very measurements over there. How many emerging businesses do we have? Do we use women-owned businesses, youth-owned businesses, and how do we stagger this right across the board to make sure that each and every single time we are procuring something, we're also very mindful of the context that we have in. Then the last quadrant is around platforms, market and entrepreneurial empowerment, we call it. So at our trade platforms like Indaba, whom do we choose to be at those stands? When we have international platforms like WTM in London or ITB in Germany as well, who is also on our stand, and are they representative, A, geographically of what we're trying to do, but also culturally in terms of making sure that we've got representation across the board. So each and every single EXCO member business unit does have a transformation play in terms of how they contribute to this one, in terms of helping us to deliver the numbers. So what we say is that I've told you about how we have really painted ourselves in the corner as three destinations. How do we bring more provinces so that we can bring the entire nine provinces into it, at the same time contributing to our growth? So that, to me, is a very big alignment space in that regard. Now I'm going to go to the to the APPs themselves. And I'm sorry I took a long time giving you a sense of the 2017, but it's important that you can see an evolution and not something totally divorced from year to year. How we have done it is have five different programs, how we split the business across. Program one is what we call corporate support, and that's essentially head office, overhead, people, structures, buildings, and everything else. And then the second part becomes business enablement, and then the third part, if I just go to the next slide, gives you a bit of a sense in terms of what you mean, basically, on the five things. So I'm on slide 28 here, and that gives you a sense in terms of what the corporate support is, business enablement, leisure tourism, business events, and the tourism experience itself. So those are the five kind of pillars that we help to drive our APPs on, right? We have got 27 APPs, right? And there's always much conversations around what's the optimum number of APPs, how do you measure these APPs effectively, and should they be less, and are they appropriate? Where we're at the moment, it is what it is, but we're always refining it as we go forward to make sure that, you know, what we're measuring is the right and appropriately that gives this committee and other committees a sense that SA Tourism is delivering on its mandate. The first one is about staff satisfaction score, and that came through, by the way, quite loudly from the ministerial review that was done 2 years ago around some of the issues that were apparent at SA Tourism. An engaged staff is really one that's going to help us to deliver on the numbers that we have. We don't make products, we don't make widgets, so therefore our delivery, our people itself, and once they are engaged, they will give us a level of performance that we require as well. The second part is about the vacancy one. We went through a major restructuring of SA Tourism. Give you a bit of a sense in terms of, on average, there are five people joining SA Tourism every month for the last couple of months. And we want to make sure that we get to a full allocation of 202 staff members that are focused on this business. We have 10 offices around the world, and we want to make sure that all of them are aligned. We operate in different jurisdictions, different currencies, different time zones. It's a multinational organization, and that's the thing. So therefore, when you employ people in South Africa, it's fundamentally different terms that you have in France, that you have in Germany. And we've got to make sure that we are respectful and understand those issues in those countries that are there as well. To give you a bit of a sense, as a principle, the country heads of where we have operations will always be a South African, right? However, the team that works underneath them will be mostly come from locals, because we want locals to understand the local nuances and everything else from that regard. So the first issues over there is about the vacancies, employment equity itself. This is as per what they have submitted to the Department of Labor to make sure that is on that regard. Unqualified audit reports, that's something we're very proud of. We've had clean audits for the last 15 years, and I certainly don't want to be the CEO that actually breaks the chain. So that becomes important. But it's important to note that we live in a world nowadays that not only just focuses on clean audits, but also about impact. So we have clean audits but do nothing, and we don't deliver what we're supposed to be doing. That is not success. We've got to make sure that we're able to deliver on that perspective. The BEE level, I've kind of spoken about that one in terms of what the achievements are in that regard. Stakeholder satisfaction score. This is essentially a measurement that says ethnic tourism cannot by itself drive the tourism trade alone. We really rely on the trade. And these are hotels, these are tour operators, these are the entire ecosystem. Our level of engagement with them becomes important. Let me give an example. They measure us on example, on the external forces that are there. When the Western Cape has a drought, it has an impact on tourism. What does South Africa do? What does South African tourism do? And how does it work with trade to make sure that they can overcome some of these issues that are there? Yes, you may say it's isolated to the Western Cape, but believe me, here's a couple of things. The world still sees South Africa through the lens of Cape Town. And if Cape Town's in a drought, they tend to think that the rest of the country is in a bigger mess. Secondly, is that typically international will buy a 12-day, 13-day package of South Africa. In there, probably 4 or 5 days is Cape Town. The rest is around the country. When they cancel because of the drought, they don't cancel the Cape Town portion. They cancel the entire thing. So you start to see now the ripple effect that it has around why we needed to really be proactive and make sure that we become in front of this water story. So part of the stakeholder satisfaction score is to make sure that, you know, we are visible, we are relevant, and we also are very supportive in terms of the private sector. You yourselves are also stakeholders as well, to make sure that we give you the necessary information timelessly that also empowers you honorable members to help us on this journey. Because as an example, the barriers that are there, we need your help. We need you to make the noise where it's appropriate to remove these barriers, or at least to ease them, to make us competitive so we can get the numbers that we require as well. So so these are all the things about how we communicate right across the board. The second one, which is the leisure tourism side, are all the elements that we measure in terms of international arrivals. We measure how much they spend. Here's the thing. The more experiences we can have, the longer the tourist spends in the country, the longer they spend in the country, the more they spend. Right? And this is basically the measure of that, you know, we don't want people to come here for 2 days in and out, but we want them to come and spend 10 days, 12 days across the board in that regard. Geographic spread is an important one. That's there as well. Seasonality is important. That in the green season or the off-peak season, we can't have establishments closing down. Otherwise, the jobs in tourism will only be for 9 months of the year or 6 months of the year as opposed to throughout the year. So we become a lot smarter and understanding in terms of which markets become counter-cyclical to us. So in our off-peak period, as an example, it is the monsoon season in India. So therefore, we market in India a lot more to say, come to South Africa, that actually you can start to fill up some of the gaps that are there. The second part is to also make sure that even our lodges, what you find is that there's a lot of establishments that just focus on international. And typically, even the off-peak season, we say to them, why don't you market domestically, right? And you get different views over there. The one that says no, man, I'd rather do maintenance than market domestically, because I can get 25,000 rand a night overseas. I'll struggle to get 11,000 rand or whatever is local, so I'd rather do maintenance. And again, it's about making sure that we bring everyone in to understand the fundamentals, that without a robust and strong domestic tourism, you're actually very weak at your base. Very, very weak at your base. Internationally, generally, there's about a 1 to 7 ratio. For every one international tourist, got 7 domestic. We're about 1 to 2. So we've got a long way to go in that regard. And what it does, it exposes you. It exposes you when the world decides that you all have Ebola. Suddenly now no one comes, but you don't have a sector or domestic tourism to plug those gaps that have basically been around in those spaces there. Brand positivity and brand awareness. This is something we've been having quite deep conversations about for the last probably 2 weeks around. This is basically a measure to make sure that South Africa is top of mind internationally, number one. Number two is that when people perceive and view South Africa, it's from a positive lens. This is where, honorable members, we will go on international platforms like CNN, BBC, where we showcase South Africa to build awareness, and so that we can be considered in the target audience as to travel to South Africa. From that regard, it's a major investment we make here. These investments are hard currency investments, right? Euros, dollars, and pounds. And again, we are susceptible to the currency fluctuation. When it goes the wrong way, believe me, we know it erodes a lot of our abilities in that regard. But we're starting to be smarter. We're starting to be smarter to use technology a lot better as well. We're starting to use alignment and focus and amplification in order to help us drive on the side. So all of these elements, they talk to positivity and awareness. The next slide, on slide 32, looks at now domestic, total domestic, both from trips and spend as well. This is where now APPs, we actually have both. We have both measurements on the holiday trips that I spoke about, the 17% portion, but there's also total domestic trips. As much as we can say, we can't influence or move VFR as an example. The expectation definitely, from our stakeholders, that we've got to have total domestic trips included in there, and we've got to do something. We've got to do something at least, in terms of educating, informing, building awareness around even VFR travelers, because they become potentially holiday trip makers of tomorrow. So we've got to bring about that side there. And in there, there is also the revenue that we measure. There's also geographic spread that we measure. And this is where we'll be using events more and more to drive movement across the country. So when an event manager comes and approaches us and says, I want to do X, Y, and Z show as an example, and we measure this, it's a very popular show, we'll say to them, maybe we have appetite for this, but only if you do it in the Northern Cape. Again, I'll make that example. Because we deliberately want to use that as an anchor to drive people to travel to the Northern Cape for their favorite show, and discover the province and what it has to offer whilst they are there. We could also similarly do a similar thing that says, well, if you have it in the spaces where you're already reaching our targets, you know, we'll probably support you on a one-to-one basis. But again, if you take it off the beaten track, we'll be a lot more, because we want to use that then to drive the performance that we want. Seasonality also is a big measure there as well that we have as a target, and we measure it from that perspective. Program 3, extended as well on slide 33, talks about the international platforms that we support. So we've got things like IMEX, which is very simple term, an Indaba equivalent, but in a foreign country. And it is South Africa going over there that says, we are here to showcase our capabilities and abilities as a country, what we're able to offer, and everything else from that regard. We now start to take a very diverse mix of businesses across that showcases the new things that we have to offer South Africa. Cultural tourism, You know, is one of them. Sporting tourism is another one, as an example. You know, even township tourism is something that is key. I tell my colleagues all the time that the number one growing sector in Brazil is favelas. People want to travel to favelas and experience the life over there. Again, in our view, there should be more than just one Vila Casa Street in South Africa. It should be right across the different provinces and different cities in that regard. So we want to bring a lot more culture into that perspective as well. And then also as well, SMEs, smaller players, but we've got to make sure that they are fit for purpose and are ready for international markets. It just does a big disservice to us and everyone else if we just take an SME just to tick a box and you put them international platform that they are not ready for, that they can't do business on. So the readiness becomes quite key. And we do this in conjunction with the department itself in terms of the support and incubation that it does, that we only take fit-for-purpose SMEs that can actually do business and showcase this country. Otherwise, they are taking an opportunity from someone else that could have done a better job in terms of giving us the numbers that we require as a country and economy there. Then we have the slide 34 on the business events side. We are the number one business events destination in Africa and Middle East at the moment. We want to keep that. We want to grow that. On average, a business event tourist spends six times more than a leisure tourist if you add up all of the things that they actually use. So we want to focus this. We want to focus South Africa as a destination for business events. Business events are more than just people coming through here, having conversations and leaving. It also is about legacy. We align the sector areas to the priority elements of the NDP to make sure that we prioritize South Africa as the market to have conversations around healthcare, as an example. To give you a bit of a sense of how we took the water crisis as an opportunity to lead the global conversation around water, next week there's a water conference here in Cape Town. Because now, what better place to come to talk about water conservation in the space than this good ground? So you take those and make them opportunities, and then forever in the mind, South Africa will be a thought leader when it comes to water issues on that side. So we've got a lot of elements in there that measure and make sure that we continue to drive a business event side. Then Program 5 talks about grading, which is really about the tourism experience. We've made grading to be wider than just giving one-star, two-star, three-star establishments, but to make it much wider around quality assurance. The perception out there is that, you know, you want to, you know, people want five-star experiences and you need to have more five-stars than everything else. I mean, indications alone already from our German market, they say, well, we are looking for three-star. We're very weak in the three-star. We're very good on the four and five-star, but we want to grow a three-star element that they are looking for. No, so therefore, that becomes quite important. Credit establishments, we want to grow the space. We want to make sure that, A, the consumer, me and you, in our decision of choosing where we stay, we want grading to be a consideration from that side. On the other side, we want to make the businesses to also see value in this, that being graded and not being graded is a remarkable difference, and there's value being graded as well. At the moment, you know, participation on any of our platforms or in interactions with African tourism requires businesses that are accommodation to be graded from that perspective. So it's a key focus area that we are driving, that we are looking at, but we also want to make grading not a barrier. Right? It can't be something that's an inhibitor, but it's got to be an enabler. So therefore, we put various incentives and everything else in place to make sure that we drive the right behavior, the right type of enrollment that we want, that just because you are a B&B in a township does not mean that, you know, we look at you very differently from one that is more an affluent area, number one. Number two, your star grading is relevant for the target audience and target market that you have and start to drive on that side. So those are the five programs that we have, and broadly speaking, in terms of how they are set up, and you know, from their perspective, you know, in that regard. Then I can quickly take you through in terms of the finance. Unless you want to go through. Absolutely right. Okay. In terms of the revenue side, so where does tourism, SA Tourism, get its funding from? Where is the source of funding, and what are we looking like at the moment? 83% of our funding comes from the Department of Tourism itself. We make a case for it on an annual basis in terms of the things that we're going to do, and obviously go through the budget vote process in order to get the allocation over there. We always get reminded that 57% of 53% of tourism allocation from Treasury into the department goes to SA Tourism. So therefore, we are a very important element in terms of, and we are very honored that they have such confidence in us that we are able to deliver the numbers and the business that it has. But essentially, you know, we are one arm of the same delivery platform. Us driving demand, driving marketing, and obviously the department creating an enabling environment from policies, enablement, and everything else in that regard. Then the other element is what we call TOMSA levies. And honorable members, just to reiterate what these are, TOMSA levies are contributors are voluntary at the moment. Right? So basically, this is the 1% levy you see in your bill in some establishments. This is voluntary. Businesses can either choose in or choose out of it. And what they do basically is they collect this funding. It doesn't cost the business anything, but they merely collect on behalf of the TOMSA levy itself. And what they do then is that TOMSA as an entity would then allocate some of the funding to us as a tourism. Roughly about 10% of our funding comes from the private sector collection itself. We want to grow this because we are realizing more and more there is pressure on the fiscus. There's pressure on the fiscus to do more with less. That every rand that we ask for from SA Tourism gets taken from somewhere else. We also understand the pressure that we've seen more recently, Eskom as an example, that to fund now this increase has to come from somewhere else. So therefore we are saying SA Tourism, how do we then start to look across the board in terms of our funding on that side? The other part is what we collect from Indaba and Meetings Africa and other platforms, because we actually sell space for people to come and exhibit in those environments there. The other one is grading fees that we collect from members as well. And then the other one, what we call the third revenue, which is basically some of the interest that we earn just from our accounts that we have globally around the world. Now, on the next slide, 38, we have then allocated our budget in line with the APPs that we have over there that I took you through, those five different elements in that regard. And we allocate them from that perspective in terms of this. What I've done is I've just sort of jumped to slide 39. So you'll see our total allocation in terms of the budget itself and how we've distributed it across the business from that perspective. We are very proud to have, is it 78%? 78%. Okay, right. So we're very proud to actually maintain a ratio of saying 78% of our funding that we get goes to the core business itself. Overheads, costs, everything else is 22%, and that's what we've kept to a minimum to make sure that we don't swallow ourselves in big head office expenses and not actually do the job that is supposed to be done as well. So that's something we keep quite tightly. Our indication, or rather our target or guidance that we've given has been a 70-30% split, 70 direct and 30% overhead. But we are really quite tight and keen around bringing about efficiencies that we actually invest more and more into the business itself. So that's basically the allocation that we have right across the board in terms of making sure that we make the investment that drives the growth that we want, to be aligned to some of the things that we want to achieve as an organization, as a business of itself there. The previous slide, sorry, that I jumped on, 38, is more the revenue side and gives you a sense. Similarly, what I took you through, that classical representation, where do we get our funding from, and from the different elements and what the quantums are basically are on that side. And then, linked to what I've just spoken of, on slide 40, that gives you our budget, where are we allocating it, what kind of results that we want, and it gives you a sense there in terms of the classification, you know, in terms of where we allocate our funding. You'll see huge portion of it basically is on goods and services, which is actually the business or the core itself, that we are able to deliver marketing materials, that we are able to deliver influential type of programs that drive and they use the tools that are at disposal to make sure that we get our maximum impact in that regard. Slide 41 is really giving me a sense that we are a multinational organization, different jurisdictions, and more importantly, different currencies. We could start off January thinking that we've got 100 million euros, as an example. By June, that's been really taken back to something much smaller. We can't hedge as a business because we're not in the hedging business. But to give you a bit of a sense in terms of what we have, to give, you know, what's been targeted as an example in the, for US dollars is 12.25, you know, in exchange rate. At the moment, we're sitting at 13.78. And already now, we don't get more funding for that. We've got to be smart. We've got to balance between getting the security of the hard currency investment, at the same time also making sure that we are an agile organization, that we don't put all our eggs in one basket and be stuck for the rest of the year. So that is the space that we're always moving on. We've seen, honorable members, before I conclude, we're not alone. The world is waking up. Our neighbors are waking up. You've seen relatively smaller destinations, if I can use that term, like Rwanda, as an example. Rwanda is now sponsoring, I don't like the team, so I forget their name.
That's my team.
The Red Team, Arsenal, right? So you can imagine that investment they've made. The Visit Rwanda sits on Arsenal. That is bold, that is deliberate, that is very clear. But it also gives them a statement of intent that as a country, they're putting tourism in front in terms of driving some of that economic value in that regard. I think that's the space we're competing with at the moment. The second one you've seen, Australia. You know, the World Super Bowl. It's called the World Super Bowl, but only America plays, but it's big, as an example, right? Flighting a 30-second ad there cost gazillions, lots of money. But again, I'm just trying to give you a sense in terms of how they're showing intent, and this is what we have to compete with. So with the limited resources, we've got to be very deliberate as to where we actually plonk it, where we actually invest, and make sure that we've got a complete picture. The more products that we have, the more experience that we have, the more competitive we can be as a country. You know, so therefore we are serious about lighting up, you know, the Northern Capes of this world, the Northwest of this world, the KZN, to make sure that we can give a fully compliant end-to-end kind of view from a tourism perspective. So, honorable members, that's our story, that's our APPs. We want to thank you for the support that you, as this committee, have given us so far. We are relentless in delivering to the country, in delivering to the numbers as well. And as I said earlier on, I'll now hand back to you, honorable chair, and let the rest of the team that do have voices, so I'll have them to answer some of the questions and take it from there. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, CEO. We welcome the information that you've shared with us. Let me just be consistent and say that last week we indicated to the entity that was reporting to us that they are in trouble. This week we want to say to you the opposite. We welcome the potential and also the effort that has gone into the preparation, which indicates that a lot of serious input to help us to understand this has happened to us, and we appreciate that. We'll allow the members to raise questions and comments now. I have noticed first, you see, because he's closest to me, so he doesn't have to raise his hand. He whispers to me, I have a question. We'll have the honorable on from the Western Cape first, then we'll go to the Eastern Cape, and then we have the honorable Kwebo. Then we'll come this side. Let's have Limbopo because of their good performance before we go to Northern Cape. Then we'll have the Honourable Mokwebo Limbopo, then we'll go to Northern Cape, the Honourable Faba. Honourable Ntela, are you okay for now?
No, I have to.
You want to stay? Okay. So you'll be after the Honourable Faba. Then I have a few questions that I want to ask as well. Honourable Lord, you have the floor, sir.
You can try and move forward. Do you want
to? Yeah.
Okay.
just something. I don't know if you've done an analysis on our domestic tourism. Every time there's a fuel price hike, how things happen afterwards, and then make a comparison of what value it actually adds to our economy by or the fuel price hike versus what we lose, or even just for you guys, what you lose across the country every time there's a fuel price hike. Just want to find out, what is Germany, and I think you mentioned another country, but I was busy typing when you mentioned the second country that showed double-digit growth. What are they doing to have, what are we doing to actually see that growth? I live in the Southern Cape, and it's almost like the numbers are just exponentially higher compared to any other tourists of Germans coming into the Southern Cape. And it's cheap, and it's still not cold for them compared to their winters. So, I mean, that's always fun. The thing that, the external threats that you mentioned, the Ebola water crisis, listeriosis, when we have crises elsewhere in the world, I mean, you almost go online and you check the prices. So when there's bombings that's taking place in Turkey, you go and check flights to Istanbul, and suddenly you can get return flights from Istanbul for 6,000 rand. When there's problems in the Middle East, you can get return flights to Tel Aviv from, I think, 5,500 rand. Why is it not that we're taking hands with the carriers to actually just bring the people here? Because that's your first obstacle, is just to get to a country. And because we are, far destination or whatever, if we can just, long destination, if we can just get the people here, it will be so much easier. But the other thing, I've engaged with a lot of young people that's 23 to 28 that study tourism, and they just cannot get into the market. They've got the energy, they've got the drive, but there's just not a platform for them to get into this market and start going. And I just want to find, what are you trying to do to get that energy, that innovative thinking, so that can help drive the economy. The last thing that I really like is, I don't know how many of us actually just know the area where we live. And when you sit on a plane, when you travel to another town, and somebody asks, where are you from? I say, well, I live in Wilderness. Let me tell you what you can do in the Southern Cape. And there's so much more to do than the Kangaroo Cave, the canopy tours, the shark cage diving, and then you can actually start sharing the local hidden gems. And why are we not then creating a platform, or ensuring that, obviously there needs to be some filter, but making sure that South Africans can share their local gems, so that people can look at those stories and say, but listen, I like this more. Because quite often when you travel to your rural areas, when I like to travel, you find your best experiences outside the big cities, when you actually engage in more rural areas. And that's we've got the people in the country that can share our stories. Why are we not, like your short left, a similar thing, share your story? That's all for me.
Thank you, Honorable Father.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, CEO and the team, for the presentation. I just want to echo the sentiment as well, that it's always, we are delighted when we meet with you, because of the pivotal role that you play as a catalyst in growing our economy. But I want to labor one aspect, Chairperson, and I want you to be patient with me this morning, but I'm going to keep it very short. The issue, because on your opening remarks, CEO, you said, I'll just paraphrase it, grow the economy and then the economy creates jobs. And tourism is helping us dealing with the unemployment and the levels of poverty and the unequal society we live in. Now, here is my point. The issue of bringing or developing, tourism operators or DMCs and bringing them into the market is the issue very close to my heart. Because, as you have said, we can sell the mountains, we can sell the ocean, we can sell the bush, But in the main, you know, tourism is about experiences in it. Our people may be unemployed, but these people are beautiful people. They have their stories to tell. They've got their gifts and talents they want to showcase. And I would want to see, or I want to find out, firstly, is there a plan in place? I see in your presentation you say, us and with our mother department, you know, the tourism department, we have this obligation to develop these DMCs or slash tours, you know, tour operators. But do we have a plan in place with clear timelines? What are the areas we are targeting? I'll make an example. I live in the Eastern Cape, in East London to be specific. Beautiful place, beautiful people. It's in the world history, given its, you know, potential and what it has achieved. Boxing is a boxing mecca. Vuyani Bungu has been a world boxing champion. Welcome, Nita, Kepula. I can go on and go on and go on. But so there is a story to tell. But there is, you could see that this story in Tanzania is not being told. In a, the people will tell in the taxi rank amongst themselves, reminiscing about the past. But tourists, when they come to East London, or if you can help our DMCs to sell and package, you know, that Tanzania stories in East London and, you know, stories, and to me, there's a potential there. Now, what are you doing, you know, in material terms, you know, to assist those who are interested to come into that space to become the DMCs? I mean, I want you to tell me, because people should be able to say, this is what you are doing. Yeah. If you go to your website, would one be able to see that these are the endeavors you're doing? How do I become one, you know, a DMC if I live in Tanzania when I sell this? I'll make an example. If I go to PE, I have a choice. I go a lot in PE. I have a choice if I want to have a weekend, hook up with friends. There's two hours in PE. You can go to Chubana and have drinks, or you can stay at Barbara in the township. I believe in township economy. Fantastic experience. In the evening, you know, they take me back to my age. There's jazz, there's live band. It's beautiful. I'm safe there because it's packaged so well that you park your car, there are car guards, and you know you're safe here. You know, and so it's not about township and the perception, but the person who has packaged that, you know, a place, he's done a fantastic job. And this, and I know black people are trying, you know, in the townships, but I would want you guys to really, you know, move into that space in material ways, help them, someone who were to wake up and say, I want to sell PE more, I want to sell East London more, you must go to your website and see how he can, you know, tap into this space. And if there is any material ways you can help him financially and otherwise, in the form of a grand award, you guys know better. You are the technocrats, you know, you're smart. But all we want to see is our people getting into this and, you know, becoming entrepreneurs in their own right and selling, you know, our townships and, you know, growing our economy. That's the question I want to hear you respond to that, CEO and your team. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Rachel.
It's my turn. thank you, Chair. Mine is very simple. I always speak about the rural municipalities because I'm from a rural area in Kiani. I just want to check with you whether do you have a method that you are putting in place to make sure that this industry attracts young people from rural and township areas. I think that's the question, the only question that I have.
I should have spoken before you. I just search on my phone for that now. thank you, Pietra. Because remember the last time when the National Department of Tourism was with us, we gave them some homework to do, and I acknowledge the receipt of that information we requested from them, which is information on rural tourism development. I'm not saying that you mustn't answer that, but you just say that there's, in addition to what they will say, that's the report that comes from the National Department of Tourism. Honorable Father? Then we'll go to Honorable Long again.
Thanks, Chairperson. CEO, thank you for your presentation. It's always good to have you here. Especially now that, you know, you come out of the background of airlines, etc., and so you know the pain we're feeling in the Northern Cape with our flights only got some flights going here from with SA Airlink, which I do have, think have a huge impact on our tourism industry in the Northern Cape. I know there are some private flying, guys going flying in people to Kimberley, but it becomes a problem. But quickly, I just want to say, if we start right politically from the top, I still believe that political stability in a country is the main issue that actually overlooks the whole thing. And if you don't have political stability, and I'm talking, then we are talking about these violent strikes. People see this on the television all over the world. Now, this comes because of so-called non-service delivery, whatever. People decide these days they strike on something, but it actually is a criminal. It becomes a criminal issue. It's not so much a political issue, but I think this is, to me, the one problem that we do have. People see this. They don't want to put their families or their friends in jeopardy to bring them to a country where they might be exposed to these type of actions. So for this reason, I believe that your department should work much closer to the police, the South African police. You were talking about the safety monitors. I would like to know the safety monitors, the training that they do get. Will they be incorporated perhaps with Metro Police Services? Because surely the Metro Police Services will know exactly where these type of crimes take place, especially against tourism, or tourists, like for instance on the mountains here, where you've got your national passport already, having people walking on the mountains trying to protect tourists. So I believe perhaps you should look in at that the SA Police Services come together with you, and I'm not saying create a unit for tourists, because I mean tourists are all over, they don't just walk in certain areas. But surely we must have a system, as I said in my debate as well 2 weeks ago, was that when a crime takes place and a tourist gets mugged, that all we have to sort this case out if we get the criminal immediately, or there should be alternative ways, for instance, video conferencing with this person overseas. He's not going to come from Germany to testify against a person who just dropped his camera here. And these people get off the hook, so they go on. And this type of thing. So I think there must be some cohesion between departments to be able to solve this type of problems. Destination development. I'm coming from the Northern Cape. Now, I've been in Parliament for almost 10 years here. And I can tell you in the last 10 years, which I represent my province, I've been really, can say, more than disappointed with my province and their performance in the tourism industry. I can tell you, you can go to Springbok, you can go on a clip by. They are actually, Mr. Lawn, places on the West Coast that is just as beautiful as the Western Cape and Southern Cape. People don't know them. And I believe our tourism department in the Northern Cape don't even, they don't tell people about on a clip by in these places. These are jewels from the West Coast. I think that should be marketed much more. I think your role should also be perhaps pushing our provincial departments to really come out with something else. You can't just say to people, the Groot Gat. Everyone's seen the Groot Gat. You just fly over it these days and you see it. And, we must really look at that type of other things in Upington areas, the Ugrabi Falls. You look at the game lodges, game parks in that area. Then I've got a problem. We get the chance to go overseas quite a lot as committees. And then when we go to our embassies, I'm still concerned that our embassies do not market South Africa the way they should. You are telling us here that the ambassadors are in communication with them. It's on their programs. But I can tell you now, Honorable Eddie was with me when was it in Malaysia, Honorable Eddie, where we were seeing, it's just a small little box with a few pamphlets of South Africa. No one, the staff is sitting inside there. I've never seen anyone coming out talking, where are you from? What do you want to do? And I mean, these are things that we should have. There must be always someone coming in from South Africa. We should have stalls in Berlin. This is South Africa. I don't see it. And I mean, this type of marketing South Africa outside, I really just don't see. You know, Namibia, for instance, they've got such fantastic marketing strategies. Their lodges are overfilled. I know a lot of tourist companies in the Western Cape, and these people are specifically, obviously, working with the Polish community, and they just come to land in Cape Town from Johannesburg. Then they shoot off to Namibia. I said to them, so what about the Northern Cape? And so, no, Namibia. They go to Namibia. Why? Because the marketing strategy, this has been done long before they even think of the rest of South Africa. So, yes, I think we must maybe look at that. The 5 million tourists in the next 5 years, I would like to know how you're going to break that up to get to this. Are you having a gradual? Are you going to say 1 million per year? How are you going to work towards that to get to that target? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I know the member.
Just a quick short one. Tourism operators, when they need to renew the licenses for their vehicles, need to send, I think, to Department of Transport somewhere else, and it's causing huge problems. There's somebody that's been struggling, I think, for 2.5-3 years, and then only once we submitted a question through to the Minister of Transport, then suddenly the matter can be dealt with. So I do not understand how you can engage with your colleagues on that side to speed that up, because now the operators are getting fines, and that's adding, they're working that in the cost as well, because they cannot stop operating, so they keep operating, getting the fines, and just work that into the cost that they then transfer to the tourists.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntebe. Then we'll go to you, Honorable Hyde. Sorry that I've not seen you on the other side of the table. Honorable Ntebe.
Thank you, Chair. See, on your slide 6, you were too quick. Just a recap of what is the emphasis on tourism. Does the 7% seek to say that you are targeting the first KZN? If that's the case, what is the other target in relation to the other provinces? You spoke a lot about the pricing, but I just want to throw this so that we ponder on it. Can we really, I mean, microeconomics sells a dream that macroeconomics bring about competitiveness. And if there's an issue and we are complaining about pricing, can we really temper the fundamentals of macroeconomics? If that's the thing, if we can't, why don't we find a way of navigating and finding space to be competitive in the meantime? Because this is something that is high level, you can't deal with it at your level. You spoke also on transformation on slide 26, but I want to partly concur with you. Yes, transformation in terms of your entities, okay. but you are an entity that is meeting and driving a dream in terms of multiplicity of the stakeholders. And that's where transformation is to show. So you can't speak about transformation in relation to inwardly looking at you. It's about transformation of the sector, because when you talk about inclusive, I think in one of your slides, I think it's one of the first or the second one, you're talking about inclusive economy. So if you talk about inclusive economy, it means that the sector needs to transform so that you can be able to tap into the possibilities that are there for our own people. So yes, transformation in terms of your entity is quite visible, but transformation in terms of the whole spectrum of the sector, it's okay. I think I'm not going to share, with your permission, I'm going to jump grading, because you said at your latter statement that grading seeks not to be a barrier but a catalyst for. But I'm thinking, why do we collect so little from grading if grading is not a barrier? Shouldn't we be having cropping up of people who want to be graded? If you go to slide 39, please explain to me, why do you have more budget going to corporate as opposed to business enablement? I would assume that the business enablement would be able to be allocated more as opposed to corporate. But maybe I'm missing a point. If you go to slide 40, please explain to me, why do you spend more on consultant versus the communication? You're spending 1.367 on communication. And I think communication should be one of your drivers, because you seek to communicate what you are able to do. Also check your training and development. Why do you spend so less on your training and development of your people? Which should be your own body resources for you to be. Why do you spend so less on research and development when you should be keeping abreast with the latest development in your sector? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Hai, are you in?
Oh. Thank you, you for being generous, because I didn't raise my hand, but because I arrived towards the end of the presentation. Let me just ask maybe one or two questions. First one, whether the SAT has made any observation with regard to the online visa application, what is an impact? The second one, I wanted to check, given that this year is the 100 years of Nelson Mandela, whether there are any program that South African tourism has around this place to attract foreign visitors to South Africa, around the activities, special government activities around the celebration of the centennial of Nelson Mandela. I think those are the two questions.
Thank you, Honorable Hai. I had eight, but I'm just going to do three. The one is to talk about the provincial tourism authorities. I'm toying in my head with the idea as to how we as a select committee could engage with them. So let me put two elements to that. Do you think that we need to do that? Will it benefit tourism development? And can you share with us how do you think we should do that? My second question is on the Foreign Services Bill, which is being finalized in the NA now. Are you, as SA Tourism, happy? Because you mentioned, for example, the 10 offices that you have outside of South Africa, but you also mentioned the staff that you are deploying outside of the country. Are you happy with the Foreign Services Bill? You don't need to go into the detail now. You can still lobby us as a committee to impact on that, because it's Section 75. It's not going to come to us. Just my last question would then be, I'll have to make it three. I can't resist the T20 cricket. Are you doing anything about that? My last question, maybe I should put it more as a comment to you, to say that when you are looking at the amendments to the Tourism Act, bear in mind, so I'm making a comment, bear in mind that our legislative function is going to be very limited because of two things: the number of bills that we have before us, and the second is also our schedule for 2019. So just bear those in mind. I assume that it would be a Section 76. The Honourable High wants to make a final remark, and then we'll give you a chance to respond.
There is the issue of the tourism in Daba. During the debate last week, I was not in Parliament. There's always been this request by KwaZulu-Natal that Indaba should be a permanent feature in the KZN, so that they don't have to always be for a particular period, but it should just be a permanent feature. I want to check whether you have taken that into consideration.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think the level of engagement and the question being asked really just shows the vested interest that you have in our performance. That is much, much appreciated. And we also like to use this session as learning opportunities for ourselves. So I want to tell the team, it's not about just answering, just to get, to answer, but what else can you take in? And to also be very honest to the ones that you don't have answers to say thank you very much, take into account, and we'll do something about it, but to the ones we have answers to actually give some of the feedback there. So I'm just going to pass over to the team, and they have a role for me, as I told them, they call me a sweeper, right? So I'll let them answer, and whatever they don't pick up, I'll sweep and make sure that I've given you all the feedback and responses that you have. So may I ask our Chief Operating Officer just to start off and take us through some of the items she'd like to lift out, and then come to our Strategy Officer, to someone on that side, and then finally to our Financial Officer as well. And also allow to our colleagues from the department, if there's something they may want to say that impacts on their spaces, to also chip in as well. We are one team after. So thank you. So over to you.
Thank you, Sio, and thank you, Honourable Members. I'll start with the, I sort of grouped the questions, there were two questions around domestic, so I'm going to tackle one of it. It's around local hidden gems, and I'm going to leave the whole research part to the Chief Strategy Office. I mean, this morning we're talking about an initiative that was started, I think, by the City of Cape Town, called an iVenture Card. Basically, this is a platform which they've created to consolidate all the experiences within the Cape Town. And we were actually discussing around how do we then begin to replicate such a great idea in other provinces, because this actually essentially creates what we call an experience database. So it becomes very easy for us to have a central point where you can actually navigate what to do in certain provinces or certain destinations. However, I welcome the idea around how do we create that platform for just ordinary community members to be able to share some of the experiences that might not actually appear in those platforms. It's something that we might have to actually look at, but also looking at the platform that we have of the short left deals page, and say, how do we then begin to work with communities? So if you're a community member and you've identified an experience which you think it's worth you for South African tourism to actually market, we would give you that platform. Because as a destination marketing organization, what we do is we create that platform to assist communities and provincial tourism authorities to market the destination. So I think it's something that that we welcome. but also we just need to explore how do we replicate the model which City of Cape Town has done so successfully across the country. So it's something that the CEO will sit using the CEO's forum with the provincial tourism authority CEO. The second question is around international marketing. There's an observation around Germany's growth. I think Germany is one of our bread, what we call our bread and butter markets, but and largely because of the revenue that comes, that comes from that market. So, what are some of the business drivers that drive that region for us? Most people who travel are around, three key pillars of our brand, which is safari, scenic beauty, and health. So those are the three things that actually drive, tourism out of that region. However, we know that we're dealing with wanting to diversify our offerings in the country. So if you look at the strategy that we have there, we focus on what we call the first timers. But we've now since realized that there is an opportunity to grow this pie by introducing new experiences to sort of attract second timers, which is a thing that we're working on. But the other thing that is propelling the growth is airlift. We don't have issues of airlift in that region. In fact, if we look, when we did our business planning this year for 18-19, there has been an increase of between 18 to 30.5% increase in terms of airlift capacity. So trade looks at those kind of things. Is it easy for me to actually sell a package for people? Is it easy for my clients to actually get to their destination? So airlift, like the CEO said in his opening remarks, plays a very important role. And the third element is our partnership with trade. We have a very strong partnership with trade because we know from research that people who travel, they would seek, people would say, now we're living in a digital era, what is the role of technology in driving the numbers that we have? A lot of people in this region particularly, they would seek their information online because obviously there are a whole lot of platforms that give them, ample information about destinations. But what we have seen is that people still rely on brick and mortar. So they would walk into a travel agent to book. So our partnership is skewed, towards trade, the brick and mortar, the tour operators and DMCs, because they are the ones who assist us to sell. So in that region, Germany specifically, we partner with some of the top operators who move a lot of packs, so that they assist us. So they do two things essentially. They create that awareness about our destination, but also they've got that ability to book these large numbers. So from the growth point of view, that's what is driving that market. But we know that we still have the challenge to diversify our product offering, so that we actually attract more of the second timers, and so that when we attract second timers, we address the issue of geographic spread. So right now we know that first timers for us is Cape Town Safari, which is Kruger National Park. So we're trying to diversify that and look at other and other provinces. How do we do that? We do what we call familiarization trip. I had to say slow, but I can't say that word. Trip. So what we do is, because trade is our biggest focus, so we actually host trade. Come and introduce them to South Africa. So right now, instead of actually bringing them to your Cape Town Kruger, we're saying, come, we want to show you a different South Africa. So we diversify our geospread. So instead of taking them to Western Cape, would be one of the provinces, but we would add Northern Cape, and we'll all add probably Eastern Cape. So by so doing, they now know what to sell, because you can't sell a product which you don't know. So that's what we rely on to just further grow that region. There was another question around skills. So what is it that we're doing? I'm going to leave the destination development to the CEO, because this one needs a bit of sitting. So as a tourism, I think last when we did for the previous financial year, because of the transformation project that we were running, the Project Ignite, we didn't have an internship, a concrete internship program. So this year for 18-19, we've now introduced this program. We're saying we should be a training ground for the sector. So we've now, I think, recruited, I think in the last month, we've recruited 7 interns. And these interns basically are coming into a space of destination marketing. and they're coming in the space of visitor experience, they're coming in the space of you know, brand and marketing. For them to actually learn the intricacies of running a tourism business, but also destination marketing. And I think they will be with us for the period of 12 months, but there's an opportunity to actually extend for the next 24 months. So that's the area that we want to strengthen, so that we become a feeder into the sector. But the second part is around hosting pools. So part of the marketing work or the tools that we use of hosting, we need people to be able to take people around or trade and media around the country. So instead of using South African tourism staff, we've created what we call a hosting pool. Hosting pool is where we call on graduates or people who have you know, studied tourism, people who understand the tourism sector, people who have a love for travel, to register on this database and put up their hands to say, if you have a tour and you are hosting trade, I put up my hand because I'm qualified and I have been trained, I can be, you know, sort of a service provider to you. So that's how we're actually extending you know, our contribution into the sector. And I think last weekend there was an advert that we went on a national newspaper calling on those people who have that passion for the tourism industry to put up their hands so that we put them in the database of service providers. Of course, issues of quality becomes very important. And this is where we actually partner with the Department of Tourism around tour guides, how do they actually brush up their skills and certificate them. And we're partnering with private sector as well, because this pool is not going to work for South African Tourism only as an agency. This is a pool which we want to open up to the industry as well. To say, if you're a tour operator and you don't have anybody who is certified or a tour guide, you can come to South African Tourism's hosting pool and you'll get that service. So we're trying to expand our contribution into the sector. There was a comment around mission. I think when both the Department of Tourism and SA Tourism, when we embarked on both our transformation journey and the restructuring journey, one of the things that was done is that any function related to marketing was then removed from the department into SA Tourism. That led us developing a function or establishing a function called mission support. And with that, it was an acknowledgement that SSA Tourism, government has infrastructure internationally. So by virtue of us having that 200-odd missions, it means we've got an extension of footprint. We have since put in, you know, in programs. So what we're trying to do is, before you actually get deployed in a market, as a high commission or as a consular general or as an ambassador, or as a Home Affairs official into that mission, we give you what we call tourism training. We're in the process of actually developing that and concretizing that with DEFCO so that it becomes a standing module in the academy. And right now we do it on an ad hoc basis. I'm happy to report that quite recently we've trained about 65 officials from Home Affairs that are about to be deployed in market. And that is a huge benefit to us because a lot of tourists, before they come to the destination, they interact with the Home Affairs official, especially in markets where visas are still required. So this is one area that we have taken very seriously. We've partnered with the Academy at DEFCO and also NDT. Funny enough, you've mentioned Malaysia. Malaysia is one of the missions where we have a very close working relationship. Because Southeast Asia has now, we've taken over Southeast Asia. It's part of, it's actually serviced out of Mumbai. And we do a lot of trade work and a lot of trade training there. And I think the embassy has played a very important role in ensuring that we consolidate the trade that is happening around Southeast Asia. But Berlin is one of our shining stars. Earlier I've spoken about Germany. The close working relationship that we have with our embassy in Berlin is amazing. In fact, all the national days, we are in partnership. The Madiba Centenaries, they've been at work trying to use some of the assets that we have now developed just to showcase or to use the Madiba story to amplify the numbers that they have. And the third one, which you've mentioned, and I'm excited because I was looking at performance today, Poland.
I think we've seen an increase so it's coming from Poland. We've recently done a trade training seminar in Poland. And this is a partnership with the embassy there.
What is
the embassy? I see.
We are. You must declare. You must go back there.
So Poland is one of... You know, a lot of people have been asking, why are you not servicing Poland out of Germany? Because it's just a stone throw away. We said we need to look at how we partner with them. And I think the embassy there is quite vibrant. And we've now seen the opportunity to grow tourism there. I think we've actually hosted some of the trades, I think two trades from Poland during the Africa Travel Index. So it's one of the areas that we take very seriously. There was an issue around the barrier around vehicle licensing for operators. I'm happy to just mention that Anime was in the room to tell you that these are some of the things that she's taking on board as a department. There's a work stream for ease of access, and these are some of the things that Kate or private sector has already raised to the ministry to deal with, and Anime and her team are working on that. I leave the online visa application to the CEO because it's a thing that would require some bit of sleeping. There was a comment around Madiba Centenary and what we're doing. We have partnered with the Nelson Mandela Foundation on this, yeah, because immediately for us it was a big hook to drive travel into the country. And Madiba is an icon globally. So what we've done as an entity is we had already, I think 2-3 years ago, we developed an app called Madiba F. So it actually looks at the journey that he has walked, towards freedom. So what we've done is we've amplified that app. We've identified 100 experiences across South Africa that represents his life and the journey. And this app, and you know, the entire program was launched at the Africa's Travel Endeavor in May in Durban. So some of the things that we're doing is because we want to use the story around Madiba to obviously evoke emotions around our destination, to create more awareness around our destination, but also want people to move. This morning we were saying we're in the business of actually moving people. So what we do in market, we partner with trade. Because we've got now these 100 experiences, these 100 experiences are packageable, if there's such a word. So if you're selling a package, one of the things that we're saying is part of your package should be a Madiba-inspired experience. So that's what we're doing across all our markets. And I think this is an area which all the missions have taken on board, and just to amplify it and create that scale. Chair asked about the Foreign Services Bill. We certainly have not looked at it in greater detail, but how is it affecting our staff deployment at the moment? So at some point there was a discussion around should we have tourism attachés, in missions and so forth and so on. But however, for now, the deployment of our staff in markets, they do not have the diplomatic status. They go there as secondment, from South African tourism. So they get appointed permanently as South Africans or as employees of South African Tourism as an agency, and they get seconded in market for a particular period. So and if you look at the 10 offices that we have, or the 9 offices that we have internationally, the only South African rep is only one, the person who heads up that region. So the rest is locally recruited. Because the way we have now been registered in market, it's such that there is, they dictate the ratio of local recruitment versus international. So a decision was taken that the only person who would be in that office who's South African would be the head of that particular region, and the rest are locally recruited. And we've seen an advantage in this because there are issues of culture, there are issues of language barriers that we want to deal with. So it's easier if the rest of the staff who are on the ground, who are co-facing, understand the intricacies of those markets, particularly from a culture and legislation and point of view. the T20, I'm going to leave it to the CEO as well to see. We've worked with the department on the amendment of the tourism amendment bill, and we've given, obviously, our input. Lastly, what affects the agency is around differentiating between South African Tourism Board and South African Tourism as an agency. And I think the amendment bill would deal with that. But also, the most important thing that it's dealing with is the home of trading. Dealing with, there's no separate council, but South African Tourism would be responsible for quality assurance. So we've been working very closely with the department to ensure that some of these things come up quite clearly to address some of the issues that we have, from an operational point of view. Tom, you put this budget in 10 minutes for the second line. Thank you.
Can I proceed?
Okay,
yes. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Mutebe. I think the first question was on page 39. Slide 39, in terms of the grading fees, why is it so little that we collect so little? Remember, that is linked to the assessors what I pay in terms of the establishment. So if you go to page slide 22, one will see there's a decline in the establishment, and there's a direct link between that. But what are we doing to kind of help that? In the Department of Tourism has also gave us a tourism incentive program which we subsidize many of those establishments, so we try to do that also. We also, from our side, there is a deep dive tomorrow, if I can say, double click on the grading establishment. How do we deal with that? So I think that will also help us quite a lot to understand what is the... Then there's also a big debate, especially in the portfolio committee, in terms of grading. Must it be free and compulsory? Or how do we deal with that? So there is a debate, and I think we will touch on that tomorrow, and how. But that's the decision we will have to make in terms of the law. If it's for free and compulsory, there might be a cost because we pay the graders. This one is going back to the grading. It's kind of on a commission base. That's how they deal with that. If I go to page 39, in terms of the why is corporate support bigger than business enablement, I think the history in terms of business enablement, that's research. The history was that after a ministerial review, there was a recommendation that we need to invest much more in business enablement, which is research, called CIA now. So you can see over the years how much have we increased. But if I go to program one, in terms of corporate services, that, can I call it that, licorice all sorts? That's the CFO, that's the CEO, that's internal audit, that's the board, company sector is there. The IT people are there, the legal people are there. So all of those people, support people, are in there. So if you look at the ratio here, I think it's quite a small ratio. Although it's a bigger amount, the ratio is much smaller in terms of that. I think I hope I've responded to that. If I turn over to the next page in terms of the questions in terms of communication, and communication is more internal communication that we deal with within tourism. Remember, our media and stuff is different, totally different. You will find that into those two big amounts on top and also at the end. In terms of our consultants, the consultants, remember, we asked the CEO, as explained, we've got 10 countries abroad. So some of them are cost for labor. We had in France, I think there's one person left in France. We have lost quite a lot of people in France. We sat with a labor case in London for a few years. We had an ESCO yesterday, I think, was it yesterday? Monday? Friday, it was Monday. But we have discussed the cost of that labor case, and it's in UK selling dollars. So that's costed quite a lot. And also our grading system is a UK-based system, so it costs quite a lot in terms of the maintaining and support of that. But what we've done, we went out and tender, they were non-responsive, so we started, as we speak, we start to build a kind of custom-made system so we can also save that cost in terms of the consultants. There's three offices that must go on new leases. So we need foreign-like consultants to help us in those offices. It's Nigeria, it is Paris, and it is Australia. So it costs quite a lot of money to kind of get accommodation there, and we will need to look at it in the most cost-effective way to do it that way. So 25 million rand sounds a lot of money, but if you convert that into different currencies, it's not that much. If I go to the training,
As after we've restructured, there's quite a lot of, in the past it was about 600,000 rand, and there's now, in terms of the, what is that, not CETA or Department of Labor, I can't remember, we need to have at least 1% of our budget must go for training. So that's what that's why the training is 1.8 million rand. And I must say we do quite a lot of investment in training internally within our organization. I hope I have covered all the services and development. Is the normal resistance development in terms of the licenses also that we pay for the different people. Because there's also, what do you call it, in the consultants, there's also a resistance development guys we use there. But as we have increased our resistance development department, we are also saving costs on that. That those resistance development is more the licenses that we are making use of for the resistance development. I hope I have responded to all your questions.
Yes, so yes, for internal capacity you are required to spend 1%, but it's not a ceiling.
Yeah, not a ceiling. There's not a ceiling. That's why I said, in terms of our new model, we're trying to do a lot of kind of training within our own environment, in the organization itself. But we have increased from over 600,000, less than 600,000 rand to over a million rand, so we quite invest quite a lot in that. I agree it's not a ceiling.
And I think if I may add to the Honourable Chair on the learning and development, I think what we have been on a transformation journey, a restructuring process, which we started in, essentially started in 2015, but the conclusion of looking at defining our target operating model and instruction was only concluded in 2017. So when we started the financial year in 2017, we had to now implement the structure, the new structure. It meant that we had to do things like a skills audit, matching and placing into the new structure. And I think that took the better part of the year. And we had to look at the results of the skills audit and say, what is a bitable chunk for us to be able to take some of the capability constraints that we have, and how do we then prioritize the capabilities that would support the business? So we're now in a staggered approach, also looking at business continuity. It might not help us to actually take everybody for the capacity building in 1 year, and yet we've got an 18-19 APP to deliver, and we have to obviously come and be accountable. So we have to. Those are some of the key considerations that we had to take to make, and say how do we then take a much more phased-in approach. But certainly, the space of destination marketing actually changes every day, so we would want to actually catch up. Part of the things that we're doing is not your normal classroom training, but how do we then belong to associations that are always tracking, you know, the changes in the environment and send our staff to attend conferences and international congresses around destination markets.
I'm a prisoner of the discipline on time. And I see we are sort of 25 minutes from when we want to close the meeting, but we would want to take 5 of the 25. So I can give you another 15, 18 minutes, please.
Thank you, Chief. Just three areas I'd like to touch on quickly is the one around the link between the fuel price movement and domestic tourism, and then just a little bit around the setting of the targets, how is this 5 in 5 broken up, and also relating to the provincial targets that link to that. I think very quickly from our side is that we note that through our research that economic constraints is the biggest barrier to domestic tourism. That is what our survey results tell us, and I think it makes quite a bit of sense if we think about it. We've also observed a response in consumer confidence in South Africa and the performance of domestic tourism at large. What we are currently doing is a study to understand it a lot more scientifically, looking at any correlations, etc., particularly to understand the share of wallet of the South African consumer and what are we actually competing for, given the notion of, you know, in the disposable income, the limited disposable income that we have, what is exactly top of mind for consumers to spend on, and where does domestic travel actually fit in that? So that's a project underway for this financial year. In terms of the 5 in 5 targets, the heart of the 5 in 5 targets sits in econometric forecasting model. So essentially we look at our annualized targets based on the underlying trend that is determined by a number of factors, including exchange rate fluctuation, movement from different source countries around the world. And we annualize our targets based on the underlying trend that is noted year on year. However, we have to also factor in the actual performance. So for example, if we meet a target in a particular year, it makes the outer years a bit easier. If we don't meet a target for a particular year, it just stretches then the burden on us for the outer year. But essentially, it's not an equal division of the 5 million additional per year. It is based on an economic trend. And how do we link that to the provincial targets? Is essentially we use a baseline of the share of arrivals to international arrivals, domestic trips, per province. And looking at where the current status is, if we look at 10 million international arrivals, what's the current share of arrivals to each province, and then look at a percentage increase in market share per year to tie up to the 5 in 5 target over the 5-year period. So that's essentially how we ensure that we get the alignment across the board, that we're not just moving for the additional 5 million, but it's at least spread across the different provinces in a way that the share of the market share at a provincial level increases as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, T. Just from the the department, is there anything you'd like to add on, or are we fine?
I think T covered a lot of policy issues, but maybe with relation to what we do for youth in rural areas, I can say we've got different capacity building programs with job opportunities, and they're spread across the country. For example, for unemployed tourism youth, that study tourism, we have a program that targets only students that are unemployed but study tourism. Currently, we are busy going through the country, collecting information and data for tourism products and services, and it's only targeting unemployed students who study tourism.
Can I just ask that you do two things? No, you do it for two people. To the Honourable Matevula and the Honourable Lon, get their email address or send it to Pietra, that advert, so that she can then share the advert with them.
The students have been employed already, but I'll have to make a follow-up with the department whether they cover the whole provinces, but I know currently they are currently now starting to collect data because the employment happened last financial year.
Thank you. It was great for me just to sweep up, as I said, and thank you very much, colleagues, and I hope you got a sense that as a team we are on top of the issues. We may not be there 100%, but believe me, these are top of mind stuff. Just to kind of clean up, Honourable Ront, around Germany, what's happening around there? So it's amazing how geopolitics can actually have an impact on our business, right? So 5 million tourists, German tourists, used to go to Turkey every year. But because of the war in Syria, they decided to go elsewhere. And what we did is we put our hand up and said, South Africa, we have the space that we want you to come in. So one of the tactical things that we did, and we did it very smart as a team, we latched on to the IDOLS program, very popular over there. And for the very first time, IDOLS series of 4 or 5 episodes were actually shot in the middle of the Pilanesberg, right, in the game reserve. Never been done before. So what you get to do, you get to showcase the country, not by standing up and beating your chest, but just providing the backdrop that allows this whole kind of silk route to come through in that regard. So these are the tactical things that are invisible over here but are playing a role. So, you know, and we actually visited the set, to give you an example. They actually had their rangers with literally guns with the lions away, and you should see them singing. They were trembling a little bit, but, you know, it was idols with a difference. So one example of how we take advantage of something that's there, globally as well, America's dropped down for their own geopolitical stuff. You put up a hand. Americans want them to come through that country. Stay covered around the tour operators. We invest in quite a lot. You talk about people sharing the story and everything else. We invest in quite a lot in technology. There is a platform called Amadeus that we are working with the department. And this is something that's going to be allowing each and every single normal South African to be able to have access to this as well. We want them to tell their stories. We want them to be authentic and genuine. As an example, as a benchmark, you know in Sweden, there is a toll-free number that anyone around the world can call. And it randomly picks up anyone in Sweden, and they can tell you about tourism in their country. Right? Talk about focus and that regard. Anyway, just randomly. So what they've done is that they've made tourism every citizen's role, and it's really a call to action about you've got to play your duty and sell the country to that person coming overseas. We're not there yet as a country, but I think those are the aspirational goals that we kind of focus on that side. Honorable Khwem, DMCs, I mean, when I started this role, I had an afro. I've got no hair now, but it's one focus area that I have. Because it's so obvious, and this is where you're going to get growth from. We can't get the growth from doing more of the same. But we also don't turn down the spotlight on what's working. So in our view, keep what's working, continue with it, but bring in a new element that actually adds on to this. So therefore, it's identifying those young, vibrant people from the community to tell their stories. Narration, immersion is the way to go. It's no longer about clicking away now, but people want to be part and parcel around it. What are we doing? We've just employed someone actually full-time within my office who's going to look around how do we start to bring in these emerging businesses that make sense to our business so that we can start to deliver on that one. I don't have targets for years yet, but I think by the next time we meet, I can give you specific targets of what we want. But remember, these targets are linked to growth. They're not just there to keep an audience happy, but are linked specifically on that side. Honorable Matebula, I would have thought our COO would have given you more detail around the question you asked. She's from Giani herself. So it's amazing. So every time we have a debate, so what does this mean for Giani? You know, so, you know, I think she was kind there a little bit in terms of some of the issues there. Honorable Father, political stability. We don't operate in a vacuum. We measure something that's called awareness and positivity, right? We drive it as hard as we can, but when a cash and transit heist happens, that's got nothing to do with tourism, but it's got everything to do with tourism, it dents us a little bit. When the world sees us as not a stable economy or there's issues of corruption and everything else, it dents us as well. You know, so we try to stay in our own lane on making sure that we are seen as a desirable tourism destination, but we don't operate in a vacuum. It is what it is, and we just have to find ways of making sure that we can work around it. Are the safety monitors integrated to the police? The answer is yes and no. So they are not official. They are merely presence over there, and they've got gadgets that they use that they can press an alert that activates the police who actually have the authority to arrest and do something about it. So they're almost like eyes and ears that we can have on the ground as well. And we also have, on the private sector side, we're putting together what we call a JOC, Joint Operations Center. When an incident happens, how do we alert the entire tour operators so that they too can do the same? So as an example, at some point, hotel shuttles are being targeted, right? So therefore, what they started to do, how do you now use an opportunity to put in cameras inside hotel shuttles that the footage is stored externally so that we can start to protect the space? Those are ongoing. And we use things like the TOMSA funding in order to put jointly and see what we can do around that side. Chair, just to link on to the safety and security thing, in my first 3 months of this job, I had one of the most terrible experiences whereby a group of Chinese were actually robbed at a hotel lobby. Must have been about 30 of them. Out of the 30, 3 were shot in the head, right? And this was a family, mother, father, and child. And luckily what had happened, well, luckily in the sense that the bullets were dead or something like that. They didn't die. But you had to go to a hospital. And I went to the DG there to meet people that we take it very personally that when we market around the world, we promise people an experience. We promise people the most fantastic time, and then we shoot them. in essence there. So these are real tangible things that we are always aware of all the time, that we've got to change and bring them to the fore. Honorable Teba, around pricing. It's you are right, microeconomic issues around. You're dealing with the private sector you've got no control over, but you're trying to beat them and align them. You use your leverage, you reward those that are playing ball with you to punish those that are not. Right? So places like Table Mountain, right? It's expensive for locals. So how do you know, do you want people to be spectators or to participate in it? In the old ways of looking at it, and some economists have tried it, India tried a bit, Zimbabwe tried to quote dual pricing, right? Locals, internationals. The modern day version of this is what we call dynamic pricing, right? So it's about understanding off peak, at what time will it be palatable? So therefore, peak time, you're going to pay peak prices. Off peak time, so go to Table Mountain at 7:30, as an example, you pay cheaper than going on that side. So that's something we're also looking at. Private sector just does not appreciate the power of domestic, to be honest with you. They're not looking at domestic tourism as a focus at all. And it's not just here. I think in my banking days, an example, we used to speak about money at the bottom of the pyramid. No one believed us, et cetera, until Capitec walked in and started making money. Guess what? Every bank now has got a proposition around that side. So similarly, I've got a view in that space where we just need one or two to tap it in. We'll awaken everyone and they see actually there's money to be made at the bottom of the pyramid in that regard. And then lastly to put through is that on the ports of entry, we've got a fantastic project. We're not only looking at airports, but we're looking at all land ports of entry, where we're actually partnering with Home Affairs to beautify those spaces. I don't know if you've been to Beitbridge, for example. It's horrible there. You get there, you don't feel like you're walking to a country, it's dark, etc., etc. So we are marketers, so we want to beautify that space to make sure it's welcome to South Africa. Thank you for visiting us. Across the board, all ports of entry, right? Simple thing, a pen. Right, everyone needs a pen to fill in immigration forms. You can't get pens over there. Yes, we'll probably tie them down, but I think these are some of the initiatives. Okay, we'll make it. These are some of the initiatives that we're looking at in terms of making it user-friendly there. Online visas is something that our minister is also heading. Someone just showed me a quick headline. I just haven't read it yet. I hope it's good news. But it's the issue around visas, it's important for us to have a balanced view. On one hand, yes, as a tourism, we want people to have free access to come in all they want. But at the same time, we do want protection of the country. Because if something goes wrong, we'll be asking ourselves, where were the Home Affairs people? Why didn't they notice this thing? Why didn't they stop, etc., etc.? So it's about a balanced view. So if we are going to have visas, make it user-friendly, make it seamless, make it predictable, make it consistent, so that we can start to drive some of those figures there. To give a quick example, here's misalignment that you find. Nigeria, the Home Affairs representatives over there have a target of 35,000 visas per annum. So when there is 35,000, they give each other high fives and a well done. We have a target of 75,000. So therefore, can you see the difference basically on non-alignment, but it is the same as the country. So if we align that with the same targets, then I think you're going to get a bit of progress over there. So that's where the interdependency comes in, basically, in that regard. We want all of government to do tourism, whether you are in transport, whether in home affairs, energy, because we play a role in so many sectors and cut across the board in that regard. And then, lastly, Honourable Member Khai, around Indaba. The policy that we have in Indaba is that we award the destination every 5 years. So what we want to do is we want to give every single city or province an opportunity to bid for Indaba. And we evaluate it every 5 years. 5 years is appropriate because it allows enough time for their host province to invest in infrastructure and everything else and see the benefits of it coming through in that regard. And so therefore other provinces will have an opportunity to bid in 5 years' time. And again, nothing stops KZN, if they've got a proper value proposition, to actually get another 5 years if they are that strong, as an example. But we want to make sure that we use that platform as also an opportunity to showcase the country. There are various models around the world. WTM is always in London. ITB is always in Berlin, right? We don't necessarily have to keep that model, but I'm just trying to give you a sense in terms of we open up the opportunity at least every 5 years. Maybe Kiani can win the next one as an example. if that's an opportunity. Honourable members, I think from our side, thank you very much again, and I hope we've done justice at least to give you some of the answers. More than anything, I hope you feel confident that we are a team that's a focus, that's aligned, and always striving to deliver on our mandate. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, CEO. We don't normally do this, but we have the youngest member of the committee who's got an afro, and he's got a question to just add. So we don't want him to live with that anxiety.
I don't
know.
He's looking at that.
I'm looking around because there is very scarce in Solo. But CEO, I read a very good perspective of in Sawubona about your aspiration to stimulate growth in tourism. But in the future, please explain to us, what are you doing in relation to us sharing the same tourism market share of 5% with the Middle East? I mean, really now. Thank you, sir.
Okay, we'll take it as a comment. There's one question that you didn't answer, and Martins came to remind me, but you said you'll talk to Rabada. Or Rabada. No. It's fine. Can we then use this time to thank you very much and your team? And your support staff, and assure you, as you would have picked up from all the members of the committee in our questions, in our comments, we are proud of the way in which you are doing tourism, and we want to do tourism with you. I have said it in other meetings. I said it when the National Department of Tourism was here. Let me just repeat it to you. When you do your I Do Tourism events in the provinces, just make sure that you inform the parliamentary liaison officer so that we can get that. Very often it clashes with our sitting here, which is not a problem. We're not saying changing it, but if we have time available. Like the question that Honorable Laundrie raised, then we can say to people in our community, but the department will be here, so that they can engage, because you are not doing tourism. We are doing tourism. Thank you very much. Do not leave us yet. We're going to be just 1 minute. Honorable members, we have the minutes. I've looked at it. The Honorable Father is proposing. I'm just making sure that this is the copy. Sorry, Honorable Landner.
Chairperson, specifically in the committee, and I don't see any reflection of that, was that the CEO and the head of the board did not answer us on the question on the outcome of the report was given to the portfolio committee. It doesn't reflect anywhere here. On the SABS of standards, remember I got the report specifically on the Tegeta mining, and
the Honourable Faber, I prefer to avoid that. If you raise it, we're going to get in trouble. Because in the meeting, you claimed that you received a report from the Honourable
Faber,
which was untrue.
Chairperson, I received a report that was sent to that committee. Our representative on that committee sent it forwarded to me. I actually forwarded to yourself.
You said twice in the committee that you received the report from the chairperson of the portfolio committee.
It was sent to her.
No, that's not the point.
You said in this committee.